from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. What happens when you work hard, play by the rules, and then through no fault of your own, you become older? Well, it's an open secret that because of that, you can lose your job, and many are. An investigation by ProPublica and Mother Jones finds that over the past 5 years, IBM cut more than 20,000 American employees over the age of 40. It alleges that IBM flouted and outflanked age discrimination laws to force out older employees and replace them with younger and lower paid ones. This hour, On Point, age discrimination at IBM and elsewhere. You can join us on air or online. Are you a victim of age discrimination in the workplace? Are you former IBMers? Is this your story? In a moment, we're going to hear from the folks who did this investigation for ProPublica. We asked a representative of IBM to join the program. They declined. They did issue the following statement, the same statement they gave to ProPublica. We are proud of our company and our employees' ability to reinvent themselves era after era while always complying with the law. Our ability to do this is why we are the only tech company that has not only survived but thrived for more than 100 years. That statement from IBM. Joining me now from Loveland, Colorado, is Laurelyn King. She's a former IT specialist for IBM. In 2016, IBM's human resources told her and a group of older employees that their career was pretty much over. She was 55 at the time, had worked for the company for 33 years. And Laurelyn, welcome to On Point. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Hi, Anthony.
Hi there. So can you tell me how your career with IBM after 33 years came to an end? What happened?
As you know, IBM used to be a company that retrained their employees, and for decades that was the model. And sometime in the 1990s, that all started to change. I had been with the company for 33 years, and I started as an electrical engineer in printer development. When the printer mission went away, I was retrained as a software developer, which wasn't a huge leap. So I did that for quite a while and moved into different roles within the company. There had been a series of resource actions. People call them layoffs, but a layoff implies that you are going to come back if things turn around, and IBM has no intention of doing that. So every quarter there's a resource action, and the culture there is now that everybody has a target on their back. It's just a matter of when their turn comes. And 3 weeks after my 55th birthday, I got a phone call from my manager saying that I was on the list for a resource action. I had 90 days to train my replacement, and then I would get 30 days of severance after 33 years.
I see. So that was, you were essentially fired. Did they call it that? Did they say you were laid off, fired, or did they tell you what, that you were being retired?
They said the initial phone call, it was a resource action. Mm-hmm. My manager then asked me to attend a meeting at the site. I telecommuted for 20 years, but I had to go into the site to this face-to-face meeting. And one of the presenters there was an individual from Human Resources. And that lady told us that if we were 55 or older, we were retiring from IBM. And, you know, this was all very raw for me. I was very upset about the whole thing, even though I knew it was coming. And I stood up and said, I am not retiring. I have no intention of retiring. And she said, if you are 55 or older, you are retiring from IBM.
Mm. And if you refused to retire, what would happen? I mean, I guess you couldn't refuse to retire, but could you demand that it be called something else? Or what would happen if you did that?
Well, we weren't given a choice.
I see.
I mean, the paperwork is boilerplate, and they just fill in your name. And you know, in order to collect your severance, which I needed because at the time I had two mortgage payments, when you fill out all the paperwork on your last day, it says, upon your retirement, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. So essentially you faced forced retirement. Now, one of the things we've heard about longtime IBM employees is that they really identify with a company. Many of them think of themselves as IBMers, sort of like a lifetime commitment. Did you feel that way about that company?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, I had been around long enough since things had started to change. But for decades, if not generations, the culture was, well, here's a quote that I lifted from someone else in the discussions on Facebook. The more loyalty, pride, and dedication an IBM employee has, the greater the sense of betrayal and deceit at the inevitable layoff.
Mm.
And that is that's it in a nutshell. We were the generation that had still been around when the IBM had their three basic beliefs: respect for the individual, outstanding customer service, and trust and personal responsibility in all relationships. And the first and last ones especially, I mean, that was how you conducted yourself at IBM. That is why for decades there was never even a whisper of a union at IBM, is because it was a family of employees, but it was more than that. We knew that we could trust our employer. And to make that culture shift is very, very difficult, even though we knew it was coming.
Laura Lynn, I want to ask you this, and first of all, I want to preface what I ask you by saying I'm very sorry that you were essentially forced to retire, because I can hear from your story that this was a huge disappointment to you. But I want to ask you this. You know, in a fast-moving economy, employers are certainly going to be tempted to replace older workers for younger ones for a lot of reasons. Do you feel that you were equipped, ready, qualified, you know, to keep up with, to do what the modern IBM wanted to do?
Well, when you introduced the show, you mentioned IBM's response about the employees' ability to reinvent themselves.
Right.
And I had done that in spades over and over during my career. I went from hardware engineering to software. I was asked to learn new systems multiple times. I had proven to myself, to the company, to my peers, and most importantly, to myself over and over again. Since the layoff, since the resource action or retirement or whatever you want to call it, I have gone back to school. I have obtained several certifications, and I have aced the programs that I've participated in. I know I can do the work.
All right. Well,
so that's not an argument.
Got it and understood. And Laura Lynn King, former IT specialist for IBM, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Joining me now from Washington is Peter Goslin. He's contributing reporter at ProPublica covering aging. He co-reported the story, Cutting Old Heads at IBM. He's also the author of High Wire, The Precarious Financial Lives of American Families. Peter Goslin, it's really good to have you at On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Great honor, Anthony.
And joining me from Loveland, Colorado is, joining me is Arianna Tobin. She's the engagement reporter at ProPublica, and she co-reported the story, Cutting Old Heads at IBM. Arianna Tobin, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Peter, I'll start with you. We just heard Laura Lynn King's story. Based on your reporting of the situation at IBM, how common is Laura Lynn's story?
It's very common, and if we get a chance, or she's still on air, you ought to ask her more about the training that she's done. She's an amazing human being. She really attacked this issue when she got laid off hard and has got all sorts of training. Anthony, I'll let my colleague Arianna talk to you about how we came to the story, because in many ways she masterminded it. But what we found was that what we found at the company was a pattern that we are more and more convinced exists at lots of companies, maybe the majority of American employers, and that is that they have systems in place that that weed out people 40, 50, 60, and so forth, target them for via a variety of techniques to show them the door. IBM may be only more systematic about it, in the sense that they started by finding a legal maneuver to outflank the law that requires employers laying off people 40 and over to disclose to the employee the ages and job positions, not the names, the ages and job positions of people being laid off with them. So you have, if you're 40 or over, you have some sense of what's going on around you and what you're a part of, and have some initial grasp of whether what's happening to you is because of your age. And then we found loads of techniques, point systems that weighted against employees, and techniques for firing by bumping down people's performance ratings.
And Peter, in the rest of the hour, we're going to go through a lot of these techniques that you uncovered. Arianna Tobin, I want to come to you. What drew you to this story? Peter described you as the mastermind of this story. Talk about sort of what drew you to it.
Well, Anthony, actually, I think the place where you started, where how common is Lori Lynn's story, how common is this, how many people were affected, is actually the same place where we started. Mm. And the reason we found this so interesting and the reason we found it so compelling and in need of investigation was because IBM wasn't giving people an answer. And this is a labor practice when you lay someone off, as Peter described, that you are supposed to say, here are the ages and basic position levels of everyone laid off with you. Now you can stop and make an informed decision about whether or not you believe this is a case of age discrimination.
All right, Arianna, hold that thought. We have to go to a break, but we're going to pick right up with you when we come back. We're talking to Arianna Tobin, Peter Goslin. We're talking about an investigation by ProPublica and Mother Jones into age discrimination in IBM. You can join the conversation. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Mindy Thomas.
And together, we bring you Wow in the World,
NPR's podcast for families.
Every week, we explore wild and new scientific discoveries.
We also ride a bird. Find Wow in the World on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're discussing alleged age discrimination at the tech giant IBM. You can join the conversation. Techies, is ageism a particular problem in your profession? Did anyone think 40 would be considered an older worker? I'm speaking with Peter Goslin and Arianna Tobin, reporters at ProPublica, who, along with Mother Jones, looked into age discrimination at IBM. And Arianna, before the break, you were talking about one of your findings, and that is that when IBM lays someone off, they deny workers information about others who were laid off. And that's information that, according to the law, if I have that correct, I learned from your piece, they have to provide. So first, what's the purpose of that law? And second, why would IBM want to withhold that information?
So part of the story about IBM, as we've already discussed, is that they have this huge and engaged workforce. So at one point, the IBM employed probably more than 400,000 people, mostly within the U.S. And that's the size of a huge, substantial city. Like, that's really a huge mass of people. And the people who worked at this company care quite a bit about what happens to them. They care about what happens to the company. So when IBM started, they hadn't had a layoff until the 1990s. When layoffs started to become part of their business model, when they started to become part of an option for workers who had joined this company, people would talk about it. They would join together on Facebook groups. They would join together on email listservs. They'd talk. I know that we mentioned that there is no IBM union. Well, right around 2000, there actually was a pretty substantial movement toward unionizing at IBM. And all of these people in these places where they were getting angry about changes at their employer would come together and try to compare notes to figure out what was happening, to see if there was some kind of larger plan or strategy or unfair targeting of certain kinds of workers. And up until 2014, IBM was providing the kind of information required by law that you just mentioned, which is a list of ages and positions within the company. So before 2014, in those communities, they had that information and could make decisions about things like pension plans, where if they made a change to the way that retirement benefits had worked, is this something that we as workers should push back on? if there are a huge group of employees being laid off at the same time, would there be reason for us to come together and file some kind of class action lawsuit? After 2014, when they stopped handing out those lists, people at IBM got angry. And a couple of years later, they came to us and they said, we used to have this information. We could make decisions. Now we can't.
Really interesting. Peter Gosin, I want to come back to you. There were other sort of systematic approaches that you guys describe in your piece for weeding out older employees. I'd like to talk with both of you about a couple of these ideas. Here's one of the ideas, encouraging employees targeted for layoffs to apply for other IBM positions while quietly advising managers not to hire them.
That's right, Anthony. This, in many ways, was the last straw for many IBMers because it became clear to them that they were qualified for many of the jobs that were available, other jobs other than their own that they were being laid off from, and they simply got shot down almost across the board. Early on, you said that a lot of the jobs went to younger, less costly employees, new hires. The other thing that happened was that loads of the jobs were shipped overseas in a process called lift and shift. I can only theorize about why the company would offer jobs that it wouldn't give people, and that is to keep people engaged with their work for those final days that they were at the company, engaged in the process of handing over the keys to their job to new, either young, less expensive employees or overseas employees.
Yeah. And Ariana, another tactic that you write about, to some older employees being laid off, being told that their skills were out of date, they'd be brought back as contract workers at lower pay. Right?
Yeah, we had a bunch of workers write to us, and we asked we put out a big questionnaire where we tried to talk to as many former IBM workers as possible. And within the first couple of weeks, one of our questions on the survey was, what happened to your job? And someone wrote back to us, I'm still doing it. They're just paying us less. So people would have these what they considered lifetime careers at IBM. They would be laid off in some kind of resource action, and then through an outside contractor end up going back to the company just without many of the pieces of stability and security that they were used to in their full-time jobs.
We're talking about allegations of age discrimination at IBM, a big report in ProPublica and Mother Jones. Kurt is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Kurt, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot. My experience with IBM, I started working at IBM in 1981. I left in 1995 as an advisory level engineer. And the reason I left was because I was seeing that folks that had been working there between 25 and 30 years were being let go. And my kind of view in the mid-90s was that the reason they were doing this was just to try to avoid paying out pensions. And unfortunately for them, they tried to fire a relative of mine who had worked there for 27 and a half years. He was relatively well known in the community, and he is disabled. He's legally blind and he has cerebral palsy. They tried to fire him by switching his job assignments on about a 6-month turnaround, and then I would have to go in the evenings and move all of his adaptive equipment from one office area to another. When they actually tried to fire him, we engaged outside counsel, and we got a settlement from IBM to bridge to his pension. Otherwise, he would have never been able to collect his pension. About the same time, he was awarded the Disabled American of the Year Award.
Kurt,
kind of shows you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Finish that thought. I'm sorry.
Well, it just kind of shows you where IBM was at in the mid '90s.
So this is, in your view, been going on for a long time. Kurt, thanks so much for the call. We're going to talk about that. I want to go to Bob, who's calling from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead. Good to have you.
Yeah, I just would like to add a different perspective about IBM. It's a large company, and whereas there may be divisions where this is occurring, but I can tell you from my experience, I am 61. I'm currently at IBM. I'm on a product that they announced end of life, so the product is going away. They told people that you have 2 years to find something else at IBM. Now, I did not start the process of trying to find something else. They came to me with the new product and said, would you like to be on this new product? And I'm getting training on this new product. Just about everybody that was on the product that's end of life that has gone over to this new product, they're all over the age of 50. So whereas what they're saying may be true, I don't think you can say it is IBM. I think you have to say it is divisions within IBM.
All right, Bob, I really appreciate you putting that perspective on the table. Ariana, speak to that issue. I mean, is this something that you guys have found is across IBM, or is Bob right? Is this sort of a division by division issue, perhaps?
Well, first of all, Bob, I'm happy to hear that that is your experience. If you look at the piece, you will notice that we tried to be very exhaustively, as I'm sure Peter is over there laughing, exhaustively careful with the way that we phrased this. Because, of course, it is impossible for us to make any kind of end-of-day sweeping final statement about what is or isn't happening at the company, because the company also won't provide us with any of the information. So we submitted to IBM a 10-page list of findings and questions earlier this month. We've gone to them multiple times asking for wider bird's-eye perspective to figure out how many divisions is this affecting, how many American workers are losing their jobs, how many American workers do still have their jobs, how many people are thriving at IBM. And they did not make any kind of meaningful rebuttal to our claims, and they also didn't provide us with any more information that could speak to it on the other side. So we stand by our findings.
Yeah. Go ahead, Peter.
Let me add, too. With Ariana, I'm glad you still have a job. I'm glad you're being moved to a newer product. These are not – the divisions we looked at are not small. You know them. You know, they're what was the software group, systems and technology, global technology services. And we were able to look from fairly high levels at these divisions. So these are not niches within IBM. So the pattern holds across a very wide swath of IBM. But you are right. It is a huge and complex company. God only knows they keep changing the names of the boxes. Trying to keep up with that is difficult in its own right. Many things happen in many corners. I think that we do stand by our reporting and that this is the broad pattern is the one as we lay it out.
I'd like to ask you, either one of you, Ariana, maybe you want to take this question. Maybe it's you, Peter, but I'd love it if you could talk a little bit about some of the evidence that you uncovered in terms of memos, in terms of stated policies and the like, that IBM was actively targeting older workers. I mean, I was struck by one really interesting term, an effort to, quote, correct the seniority mix, unquote, which is a pretty antiseptic way of talking about dumping older people.
Ariana, let me start and then you take it away. But we have planning documents for a major division. Every fall, they put together essentially a resource plan for the coming year. These very specifically say that, particularly in the most recent round, that among the plans are plans to make major layoffs and use the funds to fund an influx of what they call EPHs, which are early professional hires, to, in the words of the document, correct seniority mix. We found in another division a point system being used that allowed them to essentially score employees on a number of parameters, along a number of parameters that were valued by the company. And the scores all – most of the scores were on their face tilted against older workers. You were given a point if you were in your job role for a short time, in your job title for a shorter time, at the company for a shorter time versus a longer time. But just the fact that it looked like these things were tilted against older workers wasn't the kicker in this finding, because these documents showed the ages, the dates of birth of the employees, so you could look at who got no points and therefore was most vulnerable to layoff or other negative job change, and what their age was or what their length of service with the company was. And lo and behold, it is the long service, older workers who got no points and therefore were most vulnerable. But in addition, these documents had the ratings of these very employees' superiors. And the ratings of these people were really, really high. Mm-hmm. The company itself was saying, these people are so good, they're either going to stay at their very high level or they're going to be promoted if they don't get laid off.
We've got a lot of folks commenting on Twitter. Krista Zweig says, this isn't a surprise, and not just in the last 5 years. My father worked for IBM over 30 years and saw his colleagues and finally himself laid off to bring in younger, cheaper workers. Linda Sager-Kozalski writes, my husband, age 58, was terminated for no reason after 15 years with a large local healthcare company. He was the highest paid and the only person with an actual pension in the department. They were trying to save money. So there are some comments from Twitter. Let's go to Steve, who's calling from Davidson, North Carolina. Steve, you're on the air. Good to have you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Anthony. Yeah, my experience is just that I don't believe this is restricted to IBM. I think they just got caught with their hand in the cookie jar. I was laid off from a large super regional bank after 27 years, along with a number of older individuals as well. I have six siblings, so I was explaining to the screener. Of the seven of us, five of us have been laid off at various points in our careers from, again, banks, telecoms, defense contractors. The two that have not been laid off of my brothers and sisters, one is self-employed and the other belong to a public sector union. So that's just my experience with this, interestingly as well.
Steve, I want to thank you. Yeah, Steve, I'm sorry to jump in there. I'm glad you called in, and I'm sorry you had this experience, but thanks for the call. Peter and Ariane, I want to ask you, thinking about Steve's experience, 50 years ago, Congress made age discrimination illegal. It passed the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. What kind of protections are afforded folks like Steve, people that you found at IBM?
Well, I think one of our big findings is that the law has been utterly enfeebled. For the first 25 years of the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, it was read by the courts and by policymakers as absolutely in tandem with the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is the law that prohibits workplace discrimination on the basis of race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, so on and so forth. Starting in the 90s, increasingly conservative appeals courts and the Supreme Court have pulled away the protections, especially on age, so that the proof level to make an age discrimination case is well nigh impossible to meet at this point. Can I just, Anthony, just divert for 1 second and say
yeah,
one thing? In a lot of the comments that people are making and a lot of what we've talked about is you would think that what we're writing about is a generational war. First, I want to point out that Ariana and I basically represent the two poles of age.
Peter, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought only because we're coming up on a break. But I want to hear the rest of that point, so stand by. We are talking about age discrimination against older workers at IBM and elsewhere. I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
When C.C. Wong met his mom's new tenant, he never suspected he'd end up getting replaced as a son, or that his replacement might have sinister motives. This week, Invisibilia looks at the things we don't say to our loved ones and the misunderstandings it can lead to. Listen on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, and we're looking at the tech company IBM and age discrimination in the workplace. I'm talking with Peter Goslin and Ariana Tobin, reporters at ProPublica, who, along with Mother Jones, published an investigation into age discrimination at IBM. We asked someone from IBM to join us. They gave us a statement. We are proud of our company and our employees' ability to reinvent themselves era after era while always complying with the law, but they did not want to come on the program. Peter Goslin, before the break, you were just making a point that this isn't about a sort of generational war that you're declaring here.
Yeah, and it's really important. Look, first of all, one of the things I'm most grateful about is that Ariana and that the largely millennial staff of ProPublica get it, that this is bias we're talking about. And it's important to younger people as well as people my age, I'm almost 67 years old, for more than abstract reasons to be against bias. It's important because they're going to grow old someday too. And so if this is the way the world's going to run, they ought to know it now. But the fact is that the economy right now is basically kind of rifle shot. It does not It wants you when you're all trained up and about 32 years old, and it wants you out in your 40s, 50s, and 60s. I mean, so that I happen to have a 20-something, 20-year-old twins, and they face they're smart and they're great kids, and, but they face years of contract work, internships, sometimes unpaid, all of this to get into the real adult, full-time, full-year workforce where you can start living an adult life. And that is very – and at the other end of the spectrum is what is happening to people my age, which is we're being shown the door and having to stitch together lives. Many of us are being shown the door. Indeed, I was shown the door, and Ariana can tell the story of how we used that to fuel the beginning of this project. But shown the door and essentially told to stitch together a life as you can. So it's relevant not just to people in their 40s and beyond. It's also relevant to younger workers.
Peter, I want to bring in another voice into this conversation. Joining us from New York is Ashton Applewhite. He's a writer and activist focused on ageism. She is the author of the book, The Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. Ashton, welcome to On Point. It's good to have you.
Thanks, Anthony. It's good to be here.
So you've been listening to this conversation so far. How widespread is this kind of thing? We've been focusing on IBM, but we've already heard from callers, from folks who have written in on Twitter, that this seems to be fairly widespread.
Exactly. IBM is just the tip of the iceberg, as Peter mentioned, as the earlier caller. Ageism in tech is just the most visible example of age bias in the workplace as a whole. Two-thirds of older workers report encountering it, according to AARP. And age bias in the workplace is just the most visible example of ageism in society as a whole. And it's dumb because it's intuitively obvious that experience is an asset, not a liability, and that age is a criterion for diversity. And it's wrong because of the human cost. One of the first stories to break about ageism in tech was, I've never forgotten it, was in Technology Review a couple of years ago. And they interviewed a young guy who worked in Silicon Valley who was going to get Botox and hair plug because he had a key interview coming up. And he said, I can't look like I have a wife and two kids. Something is wrong with a society where someone being old enough to have a wife and two little kids means that he is not eligible for full participation in the workforce.
Right. Clearly, it's unfair. Age discrimination, unfair. It's also illegal. But Ashton, can you make the case that embracing older employees is actually good for business? Because sort of the underlying assumption here is, you know, IBM is facing a challenge to restructure this new high-tech sort of global world. It's got to pare down. It's got to bring in the young, bright kids who will accept less money. what's good for their business about holding on to their older employees?
Well, we know that age is a criterion for diversity. We know that diverse workplaces aren't just better places to work. They work better. And not one stereotype about older workers is true. If you do the same thing for 40 years and no one offers you a challenge, you may get, you know, stuck in a rut. But older employees are just as quick to learn, as we learned from Lori at the very beginning. They show they are the most engaged of all workers. And it is mixed age teams, you know, which again is intuitively obvious, that are the most effective on creative tasks. So what we want, just as we want a workforce that, you know, where not everyone around the table is the same color and the same gender, we need all ages around the table too, to keep up in the global economy and to you know, fill the demands of people of all ages.
Lots of callers want to get into this conversation. I want to get back to them. So let's go to Kathleen. She's calling from Boston. Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for calling. You're on the air, so go ahead.
Hi there. This is Kathleen. Like you said, I'm seeing this all over. This is just common in corporate America. Recently, a large financial services firm in Boston has had a huge layoff, which does not get publicized. It's a privately held company, so the information is not available to the public. They definitely targeted people age 55 and over. And they offered early retirement first. And those who didn't take early retirement, and many didn't because they were very important employees, people who were running major departments and very successful on high priority work, decided not to take the package because why would I be laid off? Next thing you know, we got laid off like a few months later. So if you don't sign the paperwork that says, I will not sue the company, you can't get your bonus, you can't get your shares, you can't get a lot of financial incentives that you know you need to get through to your next job.
Got it.
So it almost feels like bribery.
Kathleen, thanks so much for that call. Arianna Tobin, in your investigation, you talked about some of those tactics. I mean, sign here or else.
Yeah, the paperwork itself is really important in these cases because a lot of times you have to sign it in order to get severance. You have to sign it in order to keep any kind of health benefits. You have to sign it if you want, basically, if you want any sort of deal with the company, like they're the ones setting the terms. And the people who are being shown the door oftentimes are the very same people who aren't going to be able to afford to fundamentally fight back. At IBM in particular, and as we're learning at corporations and companies across the U.S., what I think Kathleen was talking about is something called an arbitration agreement. And what an arbitration agreement requires is that you say, I am signing away my right to take this to court. If I decide to pursue a complaint against the company, we will go to an arbiter. We both agree that we will go to somebody chosen by the company who will make a decision in either in my favor or in the company's favor, and that decision will be binding. Well, as we talk about in our story and as more and more research is coming out, they almost always end up deciding on the side of the employer. So essentially, you can have a case to make, but you're signing away your chance to have your day in court. In a lot of these cases, people were also signing away their right to talk to the public about it. They signed something called a non-disclosure agreement a non-disparagement clause.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. So all kinds of paperwork that's sort of holding people back. Let's go to Don, who's calling from Palm Harbor, Florida. Don, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you.
Sure.
So I was just going to make a comment about some of my experiences in the Bay Area and being able to work with different companies, you know, older companies, say like Microsoft, to younger companies like Google, to really young companies like Facebook. And the cultural differences between those two is stark. And my quick observation has to do entirely with age. And I guess my main comment is, what about IBM's right to survival and to shift their culture to a more young, innovative culture versus maybe something that's weighted so heavily on the age? I know it sounds, you know, bad, but to some extent, there's huge advantage. And I love the previous author's comments on having the mix of people. But in IBM's case, maybe they got too old and not so innovative. I don't know. What
We'll put that question out there. I don't know who wants to take it. I hear you, Peter. I hear you chomping at the bit.
I do.
Go ahead, and we'll come back to you, Ashton, after Peter. Go ahead. I figured we would have some eager takers on that question.
Look, there are a lot of ways to answer this question, but let IBM answer the question. So one of the amazing things about some of the documents we got that they have the system by which they rated employees, and we're not talking about 5 employees or 20 employees or 100 employees, but hundreds and hundreds in each of these documents, by which they rated the employees for layoff. But then you had the company's own assessment of the quality of these employees' work and the likelihood of their being promoted. And the company itself said these people were doing a good job. The people with the lowest number of points and therefore the most vulnerable to negative job change and especially layoff were the very people who had the highest ratings by or very, very good ratings by the company. So I don't know. Either they have a strange job performance rating system where superiors are cooking the books, or these people were perfectly capable of doing the jobs that IBM needed doing.
Ashton Applewhite, I mean, I know where the caller was coming from. I'm not saying I agree with it, but sort of this simple point. Look, IBM wants to get with the program. It wants to be younger, doesn't have a right to do that.
Sure, but one way to do that is to hire qualified people and to look at their qualifications instead of their age. What does too old mean? We would never say a company is like too black or, you know, too white. Age is not an indicator of much of anything about a person. And the longer we live, the more different from one another we become. Some people are imaginative and like to mix it up. Some people don't. We are that way pretty much from the way we're born. And the stereotype that older people are not innovative or not imaginative or not adaptable is a bogus, false one. Look at the individual and see what they're able to contribute to the project, to the culture, and hire accordingly. Make it age blind, just as it should be race blind and gender blind.
Let's go to Larry, who's calling from Troy, Ohio. Larry, you're on the air. It's good to have you. Please go ahead.
Hi, Anthony. My concern is that, you know, with the trend of Social Security and wanting to increase the ages before you can retire, how, you know, this is going to really be adversely affect people who are being terminated from their jobs at an earlier age.
Larry, it's a great point. I want to start with you, Ashton, on this one. I mean, we are living in a world where we know the vast majority of people can no longer count on pensions. Peter, you've written about this in a big, big way. But Ashton, go ahead and respond to this.
I love that point. I mean, this policy of terminating older workers wreaks havoc on retirement planning. The recession hit my generation. I'm dead center in the baby boom. It reduces your Social Security credits. It forces people to take benefits early. It sharply reduces your lifetime benefits. The latest census showed that the 65-plus demographic was the only one that got poorer. And it is because older people, I mean, I don't know if you've heard about these older nomads who are living in secondhand RVs because they can't afford homes anymore and have become migrants seeking low-wage, minimum-wage jobs on a seasonal basis. I mean, they are barely keeping it together, and many of them are entering poverty.
Peter, many years ago, I talked to you about your book, High Wire, The Precarious Financial Lives of American Families. And one of the points in that book was the lessening of financial support that American families can depend on. This seems to be one more straw on that camel's back.
That's right. Look, there are two things going on here. We did a big experiment, a big sort of financial experiment with the boomer generation, which is we took away traditional pensions and we replaced them with 401ks or 401k-like accounts. Making investment decisions on your own, particularly investment decisions that are going to have the consequences 30 or 40 years from now, is really, really hard. One of the things I did in the book is that I called up all the living Nobel laureates in economics and asked them what they did for their retirements, and they made all the same stupid mistakes that we all make. Put it in a passbook savings account. One of them invested in spec real estate in Phoenix and lost his Nobel Prize winnings. So we have had this experiment and we've left a generation ill-prepared. The thing that's happening, and it's great news, right, is that we are living longer and we're living longer healthy. And if we're going to live longer and live longer healthy, and we're going to force people out of the workforce at the same old age we used to have when 65 was a mandatory retirement age. Incidentally, if that's now illegal, then you're going to be really stretched. There's not going to be enough to get you through those years. So the idea of having people have the right, and this is one of the other points I want to make, talking about people working longer, talking about defending people's right to work longer does not say to somebody, for example, somebody who is now retired, oh, you should go back to work, or it was wrong of you to stop working. The point is, you should, if you are capable, you should have the right to keep working, particularly if you're going to live to ripe old ages.
Ashton, I think we have time for sort of one more thought here, and I want to ask you finally, what's your advice to older workers who might be facing this peril of being forced out before they're ready? I mean, is this about fighting for your rights under the law? Is it about adapting to the changing workplace? What's your advice?
Listen, I'm an activist, so I think, I mean, if we were talking about the role of women in the workforce, we'd be talking about sexism and structural discrimination in the culture as a whole. If we don't tackle ageism itself, as we have sexism and racism, although our jobs are far from done, we will never get at the root of this. The recruiters who say, you know, collapse your resume or hide those early accomplishments, all that does is put a Band-Aid on the problem and give a pass to the underlying discrimination that makes those behaviors necessary and that gives these companies a pass. We need a broad-based social movement like the women's movement to make discrimination on the basis of age as unacceptable as any other form of prejudice, and not just in the workplace, everywhere in the world around us, starting between our ears.
All right. Well, with that battle cry, we will end this hour. Ashton Applewhite, writer, activist focused on ageism, author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. Ashton, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Peter Goslin, contributing reporter at ProPublica covering aging. Thank you, and thank you for your piece. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Anthony.
And Ariana Tobin, engagement reporter at ProPublica. Thanks very much to you as well. It was great having you.
Thanks, Anthony.
And listeners, you can continue this conversation. You can actually see the report that we've been discussing at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.